I'm speaking with Teresa Hayter. Teresa is based in Oxford, England. She is an activist and a writer. She has been a longtime anti-racist campaigner. She's active in the campaign to close Campsfield, and also the author of various books, including Open Borders, The Case Against Immigration Controls. Welcome to No One's Legal Radio, Teresa.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
My first question is to ask you if you can provide an overview of the network of detention and removal centers for migrants and refugees in Great Britain. There's a campaign across the country to close down all these centers, but can you give our listeners an idea of the extent of these centers and the purpose that they serve?
There are about 2,800 people locked up at any one time, which is an increase of about fourfold since the Labour government took office in 1997. So the numbers are going up rapidly, and the Labour government says that it hopes to increase the numbers detained to 4,000. The people are detained in about 10 different what are now called immigration removal centres, very misleadingly, because people are sometimes locked up as soon as they arrive in this country, and some of them subsequently get refugee status. So it isn't just people who failed in their applications for refugee status. And there are also people who have problems with the immigration in other ways, who failed to renew their visas or something, who the government is trying to deport or wishes to deport. And the system, Britain's one of the worst countries in Europe as far as detention goes, in the sense that there's virtually no judicial supervision of detention. People are detained quite arbitrarily on the say-so of quite junior immigration officials. They don't have to give any proper reasons for. There's a kind of checklist of reasons for detaining people, but there's no proper or reasons, no judicial supervision of decisions to detain. And people can be detained for indefinite periods. We heard of somebody the other day who was finally released after 5 years in various immigration detention prisons. We call them prisons. They are prisons in effect. But in some ways they're worse than prisons because people don't know when or whether they will ever be released. And very often, of course, what happens is they're not released. They are deported. But in some cases, they get refugee status. In other cases, they're just released in quite arbitrarily as they've been detained. And most of the detention centres are run by private security firms, whose guards are badly paid and virtually untrained, and often brutally racist. There are a lot of examples of gross racist behaviour of security guards towards people who are, you know, very often traumatised, fleeing from persecution and torture, in some cases torture.
Could you speak specifically about the Close the Campsfield campaign? Campsfield House being one specific detention center for migrants. From what I understand, the center's been open since 1993, and basically since the center opened, there has been a campaign to close it, and I think for more than a decade there have been monthly protests. So can you give our listeners an idea of that struggle at Campsfield and the conditions there?
Campsfield was opened as an immigration detention centre in 1993. It was previously a youth detention centre. We've been campaigning ever since it was opened. We were actually there when the first people were brought into Campsfield with placards, and we set up a campaign which demands the closure of Campsfield and of all detention centres, and an end to deportations and an end to racist immigration controls. And we have had demonstrations on the last Saturday of each month ever since Campsfield was opened. And these have varied. I mean, some of them have been quite big and quite militant and noisy. And the detainees themselves in Campsfield, perhaps partly because of the strength of our campaign outside, have often protested. They've been on hunger strike quite often. There have been two major protests by people inside involving a lot of physical damage, and quite a few smaller protests with people climbing onto the roof and asking, calling for their freedom. We've the government actually announced that Campsfield would be closed a few years ago, and we are very sure that there's no explanation for that other than the strength of the protests, both inside and outside Campsfield. But the government then opened two big new detention centres at Harmondsworth and Yarlswood, and in both of those were major protests and a lot of physical damage. The detainees, or somebody, burnt down Yarlswood Detention Centre. And so I think it's because of that the government decided not to close Campsfield after all, and in fact it decided to expand it.
You've already alluded to this in your other responses. You've spoken that the main issue is not simply to have better conditions in detention centres or that just have judicial review and a variety of other reforms, but to close down all immigrant detention centers. And I'm just wondering if you could speak to that demand, speak to how campaigners in Britain have come to that position and why, and how difficult it's been to put forward that position in a context where mainstream public assumes it necessary to detain migrants, to detain refugees.
Well, we believe that it's completely wrong and shocking, and that actually in the future generations will look back on this episode of detaining innocent people who come here for their to achieve safety. We believe that this is an outrageous way to treat refugees and innocent people, and people who've at very worst overstayed their visas. We believe that there's absolutely no need to lock people up, and of course, I mean, if we're asked, if I'm asked, how do you enforce immigration controls without locking people up if they try to infringe these controls? Well, the answer is that the controls themselves are quite unnecessary, and the campaign to close Campsfield has from the beginning had a position where we had a debate in early days on whether or not we believed that immigration control should be abolished. And we, because it's been a broad-based campaign, we reached a kind of compromise in which we said that we should get rid of racist immigration controls. Well, most of us believe that getting rid of racist immigration controls means getting rid of all immigration controls, because immigration controls are inherently racist. But so we don't believe. I mean, what's happening currently in Europe and other countries is that governments are creating a kind of vast edifice of repression in a partly vain attempt to stop people coming here. And, I mean, detention is one of the cruelest aspects of this repression, these abuses of human rights.
I'm just wondering if you could speak more to how the general public, the public that you've campaigned to, have responded to the demand for the closing of detention centers and an end to all racist immigration controls.
Well, I think a lot of people don't know that these immigration prisons exist, and very often we find that when people do find out what's going on in these places and the way that people are being treated, they're actually very shocked. I mean, there are lots of decent people, not necessarily left-wing. I mean, good liberals, good humane people who, when they're told about that, when they learn what happens to people in these immigration prisons, and especially if they go and visit people there, they are very shocked. They are appalled that the British state should be behaving in such a way. It undermines their view of this country, just as it does of the people who come here to flee for their safety. Often say that they expect to find that this is a country where human rights are observed, and it comes as quite a shock to find that they're so badly abused in detention. So there are, you know, there is in among sort of ordinary, decent people a lot of support once they know what happens in these centres for closing them down, for people not being locked up. But, of course, there are also a lot of pressure from the right wing and from the racist for immigration controls, tougher immigration controls. I mean, one of the responses we get is they shouldn't lock them up, they should just send them back. You know, we shouldn't be wasting money on locking them up in detention centres. We should just get rid of them, remove them. And there is a lot of racism in this country and other countries. And my strong belief is that the government is responding to what it believes to be the racism of the general population. I sometimes think they have a wrong view, that they're terribly influenced by the tabloid press that we have in this country, which has been conducting a kind of relentless campaign against refugees and asylum seekers, day in, day out. There are kind of inaccurate stories about asylum seekers and demands for tougher treatment, and the government appears to believe that the way to win votes is to appease the racists.
In your book, Open Borders, The Case Against Immigration Controls, you talk about resistance to immigration controls, and you refer to the sans-papier movement that began in France in the mid-1990s, and the sans-papiers themselves making a distinction between wanting support from allies but not wanting direction given to them by mainly white allies. And I'm wondering if you could apply that distinction to the work that you've been involved and others have been involved in, the campaign to close Campsfield, the Barbed Wire Britain Network, and in general liaising with detainees themselves, with migrants and refugees themselves. How have you navigated that distinction between offering support and letting the people directly affected determine and direct their own campaigns? Can you just speak to that that important distinction?
Well, I think the sans-papier movement in France is incredibly powerful and impressive. They've done a huge amount of demonstrating and occupations and publicizing their cause, and it has been a movement of undocumented people, sans-papier, themselves, and they have very much insisted on their right to organize themselves. They've also very much insisted on what they require is not pity, but that actually it's in the interest of all workers, the working class in general in France and in other European countries, to struggle for the rights of sans-papier, because undermining the rights of sans-papiers is one way of undermining the rights of all workers. So what they want is solidarity rather than pity, and a sense of that the local population's interests are very much the same as the interests of the sans-papiers themselves. The growth of the sans-papiers movement in France, I think, partly came out of a particularly kind of vicious deprivation of rights of people, of residents in France, of people who'd lived in France for many years and had suddenly had their resident permits withdrawn or reduced to, made much more temporary. In Britain, the situation is a bit different, and we haven't so far had a big movement among migrants and refugees in the same way that's happening in the rest in many other European countries. And I think I think things are changing. I mean, I think people in Britain are beginning to organise themselves very much more, and together with us. I mean, we've been able to work with Iraqi and Iranian organisations and Congolese people who are, you know, struggling for their rights. But the demands are necessarily a bit different in this country. I mean, migrants and refugees don't demand papers, because the papers is exactly what were the introduction of resident permits and ID identification cards are what we are all struggling against and do not want. So the situation in Britain is rather particular.
Teresa Haider, thank you very much for speaking with us today, and good luck with your organizing and your campaigning in Britain.
Thanks very much.